I'm so glad you're here with us on the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you and that wallet of yours. I want you to learn ideas from me so you can save more and spend less. And don't let anyone ever rip you off. Our main website, Clark.com. When you have a question for me, go to Clark.com/ask. Coming up in just a few minutes in today's Clarkrageous Moment, I have a new special warning for you. If you use Zelle or Venmo or PayPal or other forms of sending money to another individual, you need to hear what I've got to say. And coming up yet later, there are many people seeking more economic opportunity that are being blocked by really, really mean-spirited state regulations. I'm going to tell you how one state is treating its citizens right, and other states need to fall in line so that people can have more economic opportunity. Now, there's something that has been proposed as a regulation, which is one of the steps to it becoming the way things work in the country, that has stunned me to my core. There is an agency of the U.S. government that has historically been the most popular in surveys of all federal agencies. It's called the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. It provides protection for consumers against abuses or illegal behavior by banks, payday lenders, debt collectors, student loan lenders, any of a number of organizations that most people in them, most organizations, are doing what they're supposed to be doing and doing it right. Unfortunately, there are others that don't behave as they should, and that's why, as a cop on the beat, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has turned out to be immensely popular. But it now has a director who is there just to protect industry and is extremely hostile to consumers. And she has just announced that debt collectors are going to have new rights to harass you as a consumer that are beyond anything I could ever imagine happening. But the proposed rule will allow debt collectors to harass you unlimited times every single day by text, by email, and by social media about a debt that you allegedly owe. You know, the current rules have very tight restrictions on how and when a collector can contact you about a debt. And I've been a debt collector. I know that it's a very tough job. It is not a great profession to be in because you're making people unhappy all day long trying to collect debts. But a business has a right to get paid for its products or services. And that's why debt collection exists. But there are rules for the industry so that a consumer has certain basic protections. But those protections are about to be eroded big time. And so it's almost certain when a rule is proposed that it's adopted pretty much as it's been proposed. So this is likely coming into play big time, where a collector will be able to send you thousands upon thousands of text messages harassing you about a debt, fill your email in basket, pollute your social media accounts, and this is reprehensible and unacceptable. So there's a couple of things you've got to know. You have the right, and this has nothing to do with whether or not you owe a debt or not, but you have the right to, in writing, inform a collector, debt collector, that they are not allowed to contact you further. Doesn't mean they can't sue you against a debt or whatever, but they cannot harass you anymore at all once you've informed them in writing. And I have the procedure how you do that so that you have done it properly and legally on Clark.com. Second, do not engage ever with any debt collector by email, text message, or social media. Because where's the real harm in that? Well, can you imagine how many scam collectors are going to pop up? How many fakes are going to start harassing people and hassling them about debts that don't exist or you don't owe? And imagine you being worn down by somebody by text or email or social media, and you end up giving money to a crook. So this is a horrendous development. It is a hideous idea, and it is absolutely an extreme abuse of the way individuals should be treated about any debt. Know your rights and know to be careful. And remember this, never, engage in any conversation with a debt collector by text, email, or social media, period. I don't care what this clown running the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau thinks she's doing to protect her chosen businesses. The reality is, this is wrong. Bob is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Bob.
Hi, Clark. It's such a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for the service that you do.
Thank you. It's great to talk to you because I've got to calm down, you know, shallow breathing there. I was getting angry and frustrated.
You are our go-to podcast for road trips, and my daughter, Lauren, listens to you at night as she's falling asleep, so you're big in our family. Thank you.
Well, I'm so glad that I'm able to help your daughter fall asleep.
So, Clark, we have a question for you, and actually my daughter is with me today. She's not feeling well, so she's home from school.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's right. The bright side is she gets to hear me speak with you today, so maybe that'll help her feel a little better. But my question is, she's 13. She's shown a robust interest in personal finance. She has a savings account as well as one of the kid-friendly debit cards that you speak about regularly on the show. As I said, she just turned 13, and she'd like a checking account with an ATM. She's also interested in opening an investment account that would allow her to buy stocks and mutual funds. And I think I found a solution for the ATM/checking account. It's an online bank with no fees. But the problem I've run into is I've frozen everyone's credit. So the problem is her credit apparently needs to be unfrozen. But because she's a minor, I'm being told as I go to thaw her credit, that it needs to be done via snail mail. So I have to send all the documentation in. And anyway, my question is there a way around this? Do you know of any banks that offer minors the ability to get a checking account with an ATM card and not have to go through a credit check? And then the second part of the question is, do you have any recommendations for a kid-friendly investment house for mutual funds or stocks?
Right. So even doing that, her credit's going to have to be thawed in order to open an investment account. And you'll have to be it'll have to be a custodial account, but then she would be able to direct you and where she wants the investments to be and what she wants them to do. And I've really been happy with how Charles Schwab in particular has made it very kid-friendly to have an investment account. And so, Fidelity Investments has responded and made theirs kid-friendly as well.
So, Clark, we actually have a Schwab account, my wife and I, and I called them, and they said that it would have to be custodian, but she'd have to use our login, and it would be like, you know, she'd have access to our accounts. It wouldn't be partitioned off. So we are looking for a solution that she can kind of do what she
So then,
she wants.
Then if that's the case, if you have no accounts at Fidelity, you could set one up there, and then she could have the credentials and not have to worry about her having access to any of your other stuff.
Okay.
And that would be a way around that. And I'm surprised that Schwab doesn't offer a more convenient way than that. But if that's the problem and she would then have carte blanche to see what you've got, I get that completely. And that's why I think I'd, in this case, go Fidelity instead of Schwab. And they have now funds she can go into that have not only zero commission, but zero expenses as well.
Okay.
Now, as far as the thing with thawing the credit, generally, yes, you have to manually send in stuff to thaw credit. Now, there's been talk, particularly with Experian and TransUnion, about coming up with an automated system to be able to do that for kids, but I don't know that any of that has actually happened yet.
Okay.
So you do have to, just as they make it much more difficult for you to freeze an account for a minor child, it is more hassle involved in thawing one also.
Okay, and I'd have to thaw it for just the checking ATM account as well?
Right. But the alternative for that is to do a Bluebird account.
Okay.
You familiar with Bluebird?
I've heard you mention it, but I'm not really familiar.
So Bluebird is an American Express product that is as close as you could have to kind of like an all-in-one account that is spending, checking, savings, all of that, and it has no fees.
Okay, and it won't require a credit check for her?
Does not require a credit check or anything like that.
Am I on that account with her, or is she alone on that?
Well, you can do a family account, or she could do her own. Go look at bluebird.com, and okay, it'll walk you through how the whole thing works.
Great.
And
All right.
And tell her I hope she feels better.
Thank you. Thanks okay. so much.
Certainly. Rick is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Rick, you want to talk about frozen credit files.
Hi, Clark. So nice to chat with you.
Great to have you here.
I recently found a trick that you can basically freeze your credit and still apply for these department store credit cards where they offer you 20, 30% off your total purchase. And because your credit is frozen, it actually doesn't ding your credit, and there's no pull shows up, no damage to your credit,
and you still get that 20% discount simply for applying for the card that day.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was a suggestion somebody had made on, I think, our general discussion board. Did you make that suggestion online at Clark.com?
I submitted a tip to you guys. I'm not sure if
okay.
it was the same.
Yeah, because I saw that and that was a very interesting strategy to not actually end up with that store card you really don't want to have and at the same time get the discount.
Right. And I use it to take advantage of purchasing brands that don't allow the merchants to offer discounts. So like certain brands, you know, you have to basically use their discounts. So you can kind of take advantage of like discounts on top of sales and with brands that don't allow certain stores to give discounts on their products.
And so I'm curious, is that something that you've done more than once at a single retailer, or is that a one-time thing you can do?
I haven't tried it again at the same retailer. I was assuming it was a one-time and only thing, but I'm curious to try it again.
All right. Well, keep posting and keep us aware, because that's a very interesting wrinkle to credit freeze and the way you can get a discount even though you're frozen.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Today's Clarkrageous Moment is a very serious warning of something that I had heard little inklings about. And then there was a beautiful write-up by Susan Tumpor, who is the personal finance writer for the Detroit Free Press, about a fast-growing crime spreading around the United States where criminals are emptying your checking account by tapping into your PayPal account, your Venmo account, your Zelle account, and there are others like that as well, where you have the ability, and the reason these apps have become so popular and these services, so let's say you're at a restaurant and somebody is going to use their card to pay the bill and you're going to reimburse them. People routinely now reimburse most often with Venmo. And so you just Venmo money. It's almost like a verb now. You just Venmo money to the person you owe money to. Well, if a criminal is able to break the username and password to your Venmo or Zelle or any of these accounts, then they have unlimited access to the money in your checking account. If you never have any money in your checking account, don't worry. But if you have meaningful money in your checking account, particularly around the first of the month when you're paying rent or mortgage, that's when the criminals tend to pounce and loot your account. And generally, there's no way administratively or legally to get your money back under the rules that exist today. So I've been really thinking through after I read about what a problem this crime has become. I was thinking, how would I solve it? And what I would do, since you and I can't stop the crime from happening necessarily, we can limit the damage severely. There are all these online checking accounts you can open now that have no minimums, no fees, that if you do like the convenience of PayPal or you like the convenience of Venmo or whatever, that you set up a checking account specifically that you put money into just for Venmoing or PayPaling or whatever, so that if, in fact, your Venmo account's hacked into, the criminals only get whatever money you've left in that online account. And that is the best protection I've got for you. But leaving it tied into your regular main checking account is really risky today with the ability of criminals to crack the code on usernames and passwords. It's my pleasure to welcome you here to the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to keep more of what you make. And you looking for bargains? Check out ClarkDeals.com with deals galore for you through each and every day. So there's a deal that I am so excited about, I can't even stand it. I need like a trumpet to play. We don't have a trumpet. Anyway, I can't play any musical instrument. Can you do the sound of a trumpet, Joel?
I don't think so. You wouldn't want that.
Can you do a trumpet?
No, that was not a trumpet. I apologize.
What was that?
I do not know. Possibly a cat dying.
A kazoo, maybe?
Sounded like a duck call. Anyway, what am I so excited about? As you may know, if you've listened to me for any length of time, I object strenuously to these inane, ridiculous, endless state restrictions on somebody doing work. There are certain jobs that necessarily require proof that you have attained a level of skills and that you then in turn have a license to do that job. But you may recall, I have been all over it when over the years, kids who have just been trying to show initiative get shut down by the strong arm of the law because they were baking cookies that they were selling at the corner outside their house, or they're serving lemonade or whatever. These kind of things that restrict initiative and is supposedly with the idea being for public health or public safety. Come on. Why would you want to squeeze out of a child the spirit of being able to learn entrepreneurship and learning making money or losing money with an initiative? And so Arizona has taken a state stance and now is allowing people to actually have a bake sale without having the state or a county health department come down hard on them and say, where's your license? Where's your industrial kitchen? Where's all these things? A lack of common sense and judgment has led to these insane, idiotic rules, regulations, laws. And Arizona is saying, sorry, no county in our state, no local health department is going to squash a kid trying to sell baked cookies or something. And that's just really so smart. But that's not the real thing Arizona has done. Arizona has looked at the list of professions that right now require extreme classroom time and licensing where there's no public benefit for health or safety. And they've said, you can't do that anymore. You can't require that somebody have to go for some kind of special license that limits people's access to employment just because. And those laws have been around in all the states specifically to limit competition and make it more difficult for people to come in and compete. Again, I get it for there are certain jobs where there should be strict requirements and strict licensing. But you may recall that I got on my high horse a few months ago about the spouse of a soldier who was being prohibited from practicing something she was already licensed for in another state while her husband was deployed and she was at a base as the trailing spouse. And even though there's a special law to protect military spouses to allow them to continue to work, the state that she was in was defying it and not allowing her to work. Well, Arizona has gone way past something just for military, and they now recognize all licenses from other states. They're the only state in the country that is doing that, according to an item I saw in the Wall Street Journal. I hadn't seen that anywhere else. But this thing of one state not recognizing the licensing authority of another state for someone who is in a professional job is, again, just a feather-bedding thing to protect people who are already licensed in that state from competition. And so if we want people to be able to advance, if we want to do something about income inequality in the United States, that people across the political spectrum recognize as a serious problem and issue in the United States, doing things that squash people like a bug just trying to earn a living, those are things that have got to go away. And Arizona's one state shining a bright light on an abuse of the American people, and I hope other states will follow Arizona, and common sense rules instead of government pounding on people's desires and ambitions and abilities to earn a living. Lance is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Lance.
Hi, Clark. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, it's great to have you here. And the problem you have is the kind of problem that's great to have, isn't it?
It is, yes.
What's going on?
Well, I'm looking to increase my savings per year, but I was wondering where to put the money. I'm not maxing out my 401k at work yet, so I was wondering if I should put the money into the 401k or should I put it into a 529. And my understanding of the IRA rules is I can use money from an IRA to pay for college expenses. So I was planning to pay for college expenses using my IRA and then not contribute to a 529 until I had maxed out all of my other accounts.
Well, I like the idea of maxing out your 401k. I like the idea of maxing out a Roth IRA. And those are great strategies, and a 529 should follow with one exception. How many kids do you have, and how old are they?
I have one kid, and she will be a freshman in high school next year.
Okay, so you've got basically 4 to 8 years that you would put money aside that could then be used for college. Do you happen to know if your state has a tax benefit if you contribute to a 529 account.
It does. So that was kind of the tricky part. How does that
So what I would do, I would contribute to the 529 in the amount you would need to each year, because there's usually a cap on how much you can contribute that you get a state tax benefit. Usually it's just a few thousand a year, but you get a great tax benefit. I would do that first.
Okay.
And then consider doing additional in a Roth IRA, which gives you more flexibility, or in increasing your 401k.
Okay.
Now, let me ask you a question about whether money should go into 401k or a Roth IRA. Are you a moderate income earner, a very high income earner? Where would you guess you are income wise?
I'd say moderate.
So if you're a moderate income earner, then it's usually a better idea for you to put money in a Roth version of a 401k or an IRA.
Yes, that's what I'm doing. It's a Roth 401k.
Perfect. So that, but if you want to use, have the flexibility of using some money for college, it would be a good idea for you to put money in a Roth IRA where you have that flexibility.
Okay. Okay, so I am correct. I can pull money out of the IRA to pay for college expenses if I need to.
The reality is you can pull money out of a Roth IRA for any reason without it being taxable, even before age 59 and a half, as long as you follow one key rule. You never spend any of the earnings that your Roth has had, only money that is equal to or less than what you've contributed to that Roth IRA. So let's take an example. Okay. Let's say over the next 4 years, just to keep it simple, you've contributed $10,000 to the Roth, but it's worth $12,000. You cannot take all $12,000 without having to worry about hoops to jump through and all that, but you can take $10,000.
Okay.
And on the 529, if you do choose to contribute, I have a guide at Clark.com on 529 plans and how to avoid the bad plans and pick a good one. And I even have specific recommendations of good plans. And so I want you to pick up that state tax benefit and also make sure that you're contributing to a decent plan all at the same time.
Okay. And one other quick question. So what about a traditional IRA? Can you pull money out of that penalty-free for college expenses?
There are provisions where you can do it, but I don't recommend it because you would be subject to tax on the money.
Okay.
So Roth is much more flexible than doing a traditional, even with the college angle wrapped up in it also. And Jody joins us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Jody.
Hi, Clark. How are you today?
Great. Thank you. So you got a question for me about something that was not on my radar until last year and has come up a lot since last year. What is it?
Do you recommend pot stocks?
I do not, unless it's like gambling money.
Okay.
And here's why. Even though marijuana is becoming legal in various forms in more and more states, it's totally unclear who's going to end up successful in the business. And so even though a market is growing, oh man, that was a bad pun talking about marijuana. Anyway, even though the market is growing, it's impossible at such an early stage to know who's going to win, who's going to lose. And the reality is there will be a big shakeout, as there is in any field that becomes newly legal. And there will be some very large survivors eventually, and a lot of others will fall by the wayside. So what I've recommended with anything related to marijuana is that you only invest in a marijuana stock your play money, money that you would not lose 1 minute of precious sleep at night because a stock went to zero.
Is there anything to watch for to know when these stocks might be of interest, or is it just kind of a...
No, it's a wild west right now with marijuana stocks. You know, and the financial reporting is very weak. The federal government is still very hostile to any of the legalized marijuana operations in so many of the states. And so it's not a normal market yet.
Okay.
And that's why a lot of people who've been investing in the marijuana business have been doing so in Canadian marijuana stocks instead of U.S. because the Canadian market is more established and it's more clear and it's a legal business without issue or question in Canada. And that's why a lot of the investment dollars have flowed north of the border instead of staying in the United States.
Is Canadian a possibility then? Or
yeah, you could do that, but again, this needs to be money that you can kiss goodbye.
Okay.
And know that this is speculative at this point, not traditional investing, because we just haven't been through the real shakeout phase yet. It's coming, but we're not there yet. April's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, April.
Hey, Clark. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly, April. How can I serve you today?
So I'm a 30-year-old single mom. I've accrued some credit card debt in the past 2.5 years. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on taking out a personal loan or cashing out my 401k. Because my 401k has about the amount that I'm in debt. So just wondering your thoughts there, because it's making it hard to save with the minimum payment due.
I understand completely. So let's talk about taking the 401k money. So even though you have a similar amount of money and the 401k is what you owe in debt, you won't net that out because you'll usually pay about 40% of what's in the 401k in taxes and penalties for withdrawing before age 59 and a half. So that would not normally be a viable option for you because you wipe out your 401k. You're still basically 40% short in covering the debt, and then you no longer have the retirement money.
Okay.
So and you talked about the first thing you said was taking out a personal loan.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about the debts you have.
So I have a credit card debt about $20,000, student loans and a car. My car and student loans will be paid off in the next 2 years, but the credit card, the monthly payment is about $700 a month, and it's just making it hard to
So the student
save it.
Student loan is not truly a burden because you're close to zeroing that out. The car, mm-hmm. just with time, the car pays off. You're getting close on that. So really, if we drill down, the real issue here is the credit card debt.
Mm-hmm.
Did the credit card debt happen gradually over time, or was there an emergency in your life that led to having the large amount of credit card debt?
It was having a baby, being the sole provider, and then work expenses, a lot of upfront costs. But I've leveled all that out, and now I'm making more money than paying.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. So it's slowly getting there, but still can't save.
All right. So what I'm going to recommend to you is something you may or may not have heard me talk about, and that is that you go sit down with a counselor at the local affiliate of the National Foundation for Credit Counseling.
Mm-hmm.
It's a legitimate credit counseling organization. Normally, they'll counsel you at most affiliates at no cost.
Okay.
And you can go through your budget and what you have and all that. And the reality is you might find yourself just trying to keep your head above water with the credit card debt until the student loan pays out and the car loan pays out.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you're probably going to have more headroom there. How much are the student loan payments a month and car payment a month?
$200 and then about $250.
So if you think about another, we're talking about $5,000 a year, mm-hmm. that becomes available, that will, once those two things have paid out, that changes your math completely.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, just time in itself, as long as you're keeping your head above water, will get you well on the path to paying that down and ultimately off. But I know you'd like an answer today, And that's why I'd like you to go to nfcc.org. You put in your zip code, and they'll show you who's an affiliate that's near you, and they'll send you a bunch of paperwork to fill out. Take the time to really think it through and fill it out thoroughly, and then go in and sit down with a counselor and see how they think they could help you with this. In some cases, they're even able to get the credit card companies to reduce the amount of interest you're paying on those cards. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show. Thanks for joining us today. The Clark Howard Show is produced by Kim Drobes, Joel Larsgaard, Deborah Reese, and Jim Ayers. And remember, 24 hours a day, we're there to serve you at clark.com and clarkdeals.com.